think Sally's question is an excellent segue into what I had hoped to present today, which is, what do we have to think about when transitioning from to the old chart to the new one that does have these alerts? Sally, are you still there? Yeah. So it has these alerts. So we're going to have people coming in to using the new chart, putting all the data nicely into the WHO website, which is a lot of fun, and saying red alert. How will people respond to that? So let's talk a little bit about the issues of the transitioning from our growth chart that we're currently using to whatever CDC in its wisdom decides we'll be using next. I hope that we can understand the importance of adequate breastfeeding skills and support to be able to list actions needed for full implementation and consider approaches to minimize the resources that are needed for adequate introduction of the new standards. So let's just talk a little bit about growth standards, the role of the public health practitioner, the transition, and some issues that perhaps will need to be addressed. Let me start out by saying very clearly the new growth standard and whatever CDC decides to adopt of it certainly has an improved rationale. It's technically excellent, and it either infers or implies, depending on whose side you're on, a breastfeeding norm. These are powerful issues and very good for anything we want to consider in terms of growth. What's our role, however, as the public health practitioner or the clinician? Because we have both in this room. If you look at the public health practitioner slash clinician, especially public health, it's our role, each of us in this room, to provide the leadership in a programmatic introduction of improved materials, no matter what they are, and to best support their use. We also, very frankly, have to find the resources to make that happen. We don't just bring something in, a new medicine, a new anything, without being ensured that it's properly introduced. And we very much need to educate the speaking of old friends, this room is full of old friends. Anyway, to educate the public. Now, obviously, if the public health practitioner is also involved in policy, legal issues, or clinical concerns, those roles increase. So we have a real burden as public health practitioners to consider how are we going to transition in the most health-oriented manner. Okay, there's at least three significant public health imperatives. The first is the development of the public health clinical political decisions and the mandate. Larry's taking care of that. But the next one is the education and training of all public health, healthcare, and nutrition personnel in several things, not just how to plot on that chart, not just the important technical aspects of the new chart, but their proper use and proper use and their proper interpretation, frankly, is quite complex because we have a whole generation of folks out there misusing the current charts. So the basic understandings of proper use of a growth reference or standard isn't out there already in the majority. Then the even more tricky one that Sally's question raises, well, how are we going to intervene when we read these? So basically, you see a child, there's a problem. What is going to be the skill out there to address a problem if identified? So optimally, all of these things would be considered, the proper use, the appropriate interpretation, the skills that are needed, at the same time with the introduction of any growth chart. It should have been done 40 years ago with the first one. We have to think about it now as we introduce a change. The other is that we have to, as it's introduced, we need to confirm and monitor what's going on. When it's introduced, what happens? Are the skills in place to ensure that there's adequate support for breastfeeding before the new standards are introduced? If it's introduced later, is it in time? So I just went back historically to look when there was not really the current WHO reference, but it was like an early progenitor. Bert, where are you? I can't see in the room. That whatever was introduced in 1994, I don't know what it was. Okay, it was just the early data set on breastfed infants. And in Chile, they kind of looked at this, and if you look at it, basically it's what we've been talking about. If children are have been fed a certain way and suddenly their growth chart says they should be bigger in the first 3 months, suddenly they're going to look littler. And what are people going to do? And the concern was raised that when this happens, when suddenly a child looks like it's not doing as well on a chart, the knee jerk is it could lead to early introduction of complementary foods. And a very similar comment was made more recently on the new chart. that most mothers and health professionals are concerned about their kids' growth, especially in those first 6 months. If they believe their infants are not growing right, they're more likely to introduce supplementary foods, including top-offs. And already we know that insufficient milk is the most common reason for early cessation of breastfeeding. So how do we consider all of this? Because it's all realities. I mean, it's not good, bad, or different. It's real. How do we consider this in introducing the chart? I also, to gather information for this, and I'll get these in before the five-minute warning, I just wanted to share with you, I sent out a question on a listserv that is physicians. There were public health physicians, pediatricians from all over the world. Just raise this question. What are your thoughts about the transition from the old chart to the new chart? And it really was kind of fun because it's sort of like an anthropological journey. One of the first comments came in from Spain where, I'm not going to use the name of the physicians because I haven't asked their permission, but if anybody wants to know who they are, I can look into it. One physician from Spain said, many doctors strongly believe that being under the 50th percentile is abnormal, and being under the 15th percentile is directly a crime. I have seen a mother harassed by her clinician because her undernourished baby has fallen from 90th to 75th percentile. He went on to say, express a concern about the wording, that the new chart is how children should grow. And how is that being interpreted by people who are not major students of the chart? Children should ask the question, are we growing right? In fact, in answer to one of the issues you raised, MEI, and others have said that following a percentile line is a rare thing in the first year of life. Most normal, healthy children cross one or even two lines during a given six-month period. So given that kids will go into the red and into the yellow and into the green, it makes it even more important that as these charts are introduced, that people have the training in the correct interpretation and in the support of whatever feeding patterns would be optimal. Many doctors read these words, and many mothers and fathers get upset by the should follow. And this person said, I think comments like these can cause untold anxiety and suffering for thousands of infants and their families. One person's thought. From Germany, I thought we had an interesting statement. There is a risk of misuse of the growth standards. However, the fault is not with these growth standards, but with the pediatricians who interpret them. I thought that the WHO would present a course or article about how to read and interpret these data, but until now, I didn't hear anything about it. Do others know about these seminars? Now, as Bert said, there are training materials out there, but are governments actively introducing them? From South Africa, a physician said, I wish people were contented to have babies that are within normal limits and simply fit into the lower half of the graph. Half of the population must be down there after all. One has to use clinical judgment. Now, this is a pediatrician, so she is saying that pediatricians don't even have sufficient clinical judgment to use these charts. And this needs to be emphasized with the introduction of the charts. Now let's get to the U.S., different problems. Growth charts are getting misread in relation to childhood overweight and obesity. The importance of establishing a good feeding relationship early on to encourage and respond to the child's own cues for hunger and satiety and to trust that the healthy child will grow the way nature intended and not by some statistical measure. Perhaps physicians think differently in different places, but in my community, parents worry when their healthy, breastfed kids look fat. And they ask me, are they overfeeding? And they don't believe it when I say no. Relatives will even suggest that since a baby is over the 100th percentile, that you need to cut back on the breastfeeding. You should have been giving them rice cereal anyway at 3 months so that they would sleep better. From my own population, which is mostly Caucasian, the WHO curves describe my patient's growth much better than the CDC curves. Personally, I welcome the new standards. Then we go to Italy, and you can see the personalities of the cultures, I must say, in some of these things. There is a serious problem that may occur, even among those who know how to use growth charts. If you look at velocity of growth, you'll see that the latter is much faster in the WHO standards. We know that because kids grow bigger in the first few months who are breastfed. The consequence of this is that the average or minimum weekly weight gain derived from the WHO standards are much higher than those derived from previous curves, and in fact higher than those used currently to alarm pediatricians or lactation consultants. To see a baby in the first 2 or 3 months grow even at the minimum weekly weight gain derived from the WHO standard is rare. It raises the question, will many more babies be supplemented? Either directly by their parents or after pediatrician consultant obviously we don't know. And just to Canada, in reality, most babies I see come from a variety of ethnic backgrounds and are being fed a mixture of foods, and any growth chart is probably adequate for my screening purposes. The only plea I would make is that most scales are very inaccurate. And then a final comment from Colombia, which basically starts out, as we know, that the methodology used by WHO is as good as we can get. But training doctors and others to understand it is extremely stated here, that it's just about as hard as it can get. And they raise four challenges. The challenge of convincing pediatricians to use this as the reference. The second challenge, learning to interpret the graphs both with the clinical and the individual context. The challenge of learning to interpret it for healthy children. And the challenge of, I think the bottom line, and again this is from South America, the challenge of becoming humane, sensitive, and intelligent enough to learn to recognize and admire and compliment any effort any mother is doing in rearing any child before jumping into diagnosis and conclusions that undermine mother's confidence. So in concluding, I'd just like to share with you, I went through all of this and everything, came up with four issues that I think we can address to make the transition very cool. Oh, this was supposed to be up there while I was saying all those, so you'd have something to look at. I apologize. And we all need a cup of coffee about now, right? Okay, sorry I denied you that. The first issue is that the new standards are based on the growth of breastfed children whose mothers receive breastfeeding support for exclusive breastfeeding. This was vital and necessary to get the sufficient number of breastfed children. But children whose mothers are not receiving that adequate support, will they grow the same? And will that lead to misinterpretation? So the basic thing is, how do we ensure that clinicians and dietitians and everybody are properly trained in lactation support so that the children will grow as they, quote-unquote, should grow using the new reference? And this, I think, is, unless we get some, I'm sorry that Susan Haynes left.
She's here.
But, oh, you came back? Oh, goody. She has pointed out that we are putting a lot of money into breastfeeding in this country, but I'm raising the concern that the public health community has to get behind this. We have to recognize that a lot more lactation training, lactation support has to go on so that we can assure that women will achieve healthy, exclusive breastfeeding. The second issue is that I'm not quite sure, Bert, what you're saying, but in our reading of the articles, it seemed like very few children actually reached exclusive breastfeeding at 6 months. Is that correct? Could you come? At 6 months, at 4 to 6, it was still a high percent. Well, in any case, we'll need to check on that. In any case, it's not 100%. And since these standards theoretically are based on optimally fed, there is you did the best you can. But 100% wasn't achieved. And yes, you began before 6 months was a standard. But today, 6 months exclusive breastfeeding is what WHO recommends. Okay, that. Accepting that, we were very curious what would happen if we looked at populations that were optimally fed, that did reach 6 months. And there are, as you know, Bert, several studies have been published, most of them saying max nixt. Isabel, would you stand up, because I've included two of your slides in here. The author of this slide is Isabel Michaud Letourneau. We decided to apply a population we had from Chile to the charts. And as you can see, what this is the, in the little zeros are the weight for age girls who were indeed exclusively breastfed for the 6 months. And we had another cohort that had a slow diminution of the amount of exclusive breastfeeding over time, very similar to the rates that were found used in the WHO. And what you can see is that our exclusively breastfed were slightly larger around the mean. But frankly, these differences, I wouldn't, you know, jump out of bed about them. And those who were breastfed according to the same as the WHO growth chart started out with the WHOs and ended up with them. Very similar. So what we basically found is in a population that was fed very similarly to the population used in the growth standard, they grew just about right on the WHO growth standard line. Our kids who were exclusively breastfed for the full 6 months were bigger. The article has much more complete data, but again, it hasn't been published yet, so please do not quote this without Isabel's permission. What was interesting to us as well is if you looked at the length for age, everybody was spot on for length for age. So again, we're seeing this difference that length seems to be not as manipulable, but the weight may vary if you really have the kind of breastfeeding going for exclusive breastfeeding that would last for the full time. The third issue is, okay, you have a good chart, but there's still going to be misinterpretation of the children's growth or growth velocity that could lead to inappropriate counseling and care. How can we avoid the inappropriate use? And I think in addition to these training packages, it really is important that there be job aids and skills-based algorithms. Because no matter how many courses you have, somebody's going to miss them. No matter how much you incorporate it into undergraduate training, somebody will have had pneumonia that week. So the importance of having a job aid or a skill-based algorithm is not only important for training, but it's also a cost saver. Training is very expensive. People have to leave their jobs, especially postgraduate training, and come out. However, a very carefully done skills-based job aid can be very helpful, at least minimally, to help people understand when they need to refer to somebody who has more skills than they do. And finally, here in the United States especially, but probably worldwide, parents are concerned if their children grow too fat too early or too little too long. And we see this, both of these problems arising as patients walk into their clinicians. The baby's over 100% in the first 3 months, and then, oh my goodness, they're too little still. They've gone down and they're still little. Or as Sally said, they stay little. And parents get unhinged by this. What can be done to revise parental perceptions? And here, I think we have a big challenge. We really have to educate the public on what a growth chart really means. Because there's going to be a lot of interest as the new growth charts are being introduced. I know that this will be picked up on as a big step forward. How can we ensure that the public not only gets the message that there's a good growth chart, but the implication is that they need support for the breastfeeding, that that growing along a line is not what's expected, and that have clinicians know what to do. So in concluding, I just wanted to say, I think we have two issues. The first is there are new standards. We need to get them out there, and it is the responsibility of the public health community to ensure an action agenda that does this. And we have the issue also of ensuring that the breastfeeding support is out there. I would argue that the breastfeeding support needs to be in place before the introduction of the charts, or we're going to have improper introduction of the charts. Simultaneously is good too, but if we wait until after the charts are in place to begin to do the support for the breastfeeding skills, we may be too late. So basically, in summation, there are proven activity options that could minimize the resources needed for this transition. And one of them is to keep up with our introducing BFHI. That means that baby breastfeeding support will be in place, at least at the hospitals. The second is to improve our referral systems for breastfeeding support. Again, a job aid might help with that. My long shot, but what's needed most, very frankly, the United States is the only developed country that does not have significant paid maternity leave and workplace accommodation to support breastfeeding, because breast milk feeding is not quite the same as breastfeeding, and we really have to keep those differences and understand that if we want the optimal mother-child relationship, we need breastfeeding, not a pump. But pumps, in the meantime, are very important, and let's do what we can until we get that paid maternity leave. And the fourth, which is a relatively inexpensive thing, is to have job aids as these charts are being introduced so that people know what they know, what they don't know. And I would encourage us, all of us, it's our responsibility, it's not Larry's responsibility, it's not Susan's responsibility, it's all of us who work in public health, no matter where we work, to ensure that the proper knowledge is in place during the transition to these new and exciting charts. Thank you very much.